CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yeah, here we are. Live in our second year for the first show of our third year. Yeah, you know, technically our third year has begun. Isn't that right? I mean, have I got the maths all wrong? You know, we turn one, then we go into our second year, which was last year. Now we turn two and we go into our third. That's isn't that right?
Mm. Yes.
Is my math so screwed up that I can't even count to three? I mean, is that possible?
No, I think you're wrong.
No.
Technically, we are 2 and 2 days old. Mm. So we're still in the second year. We have to complete the second year.
No, we've completed the second year.
We completed the first year, then we celebrated our first birthday.
Yeah.
Right. Then we completed the second year, celebrated our second birthday.
Yeah.
So now we're into the third year.
Yeah.
And we'll
Yeah. Right. Okay.
We are
meaning
starting
we'll celebrate
the third
our third year, but now we're still in the second year, but the days are different.
No. We've done 2 years. 2 years are gone. They're complete.
Thank you.
Are we not doing like 2 years and 4 days?
Yes.
Two
yes years if we, this is like this is the kind of thing you can imagine. Even ancient Egyptians understood this shit, and we're struggling
abacus.
With it. Yeah. We need an abacus.
Ah, yeah, that's what we need. That's what's going to fix this.
The bottom line is we're getting old.
We're only two, Sia.
Yeah.
We're not getting old.
In dog years, that's like 20.
Yeah, like in dog years, it's a long time. Mabs, you missed Carl. I brought him in yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, he was running around the studio. Misbehaving.
What do babies do at this age? Do they start talking or walking or doing anything?
No. After they've turned two, they start coming alive. They start actually interacting with other human beings. And they become interesting.
This is going to be an interesting year.
Hell yes. So what's happening? What am I missing out on? I didn't pay attention to the news at all this weekend, except I did see the EFF rally and sent Julius a congratulations.
Oh, okay.
Apparently he lost an aunt or something as well.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so I sent him congratulations and I sent him commiserations, obviously. And he replied. So, obviously, he's having a good weekend.
Well, I saw Pierre de Vos on Twitter talking about how impressive the stadium looked compared to that ANC rally with an empty stadium.
Yeah, I was talking to Mangoba yesterday about this, and he said he ranked them as follows. He said, as far as manifesto launches, EFF's one was the most impressive looking, then the DA's, and then the ANC's. The poor ANC, they just can't catch a break at the moment, can they?
Doesn't look like it. They're definitely having a harder time than what they used to.
Yeah. So what's going on? What do we need to know? Sia, what did you do for the long weekend? Anything exciting?
Yo, chilled, and chilled some more.
Yeah, I had a nice quiet weekend too. I had people around on Friday night. Woke up on Saturday, slightly hungover. Went about my business. Saturday was very quiet. I was meant to do stuff, but I cancelled it all and just stayed at home.
Oh. Mm.
And then on Sunday, you know, as little as possible. But altogether, it was very good.
No, I mean, I had a little bit of everything this weekend. A little bit of work. Then there was a braai on Saturday. Then there was a birthday lunch / dinner / midnight activities on the Sunday.
Sounds like a lot. Sounds like you were busy.
And then on Monday, I was just man down.
Yeah. I'm not moving. Don't talk to me. You know, it's also getting cold enough now that you want to stay in bed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like last night, I got into bed early. Early-ish. For me, early. 9 o'clock. I was in bed, and I had a book. I was reading this book, and I was just all, like, cozy and ready for that whole wintery thing. I know I'll be over it in 3 days, once winter actually starts.
But isn't this just a cold front?
Yeah, it is a little bit. Look, I mean, I'm sitting here wearing a T-shirt now, but we're in an air-conditioned room. I know it won't be long. And we'll be complaining about the cold.
Mm.
And, so I'm not going to, I'm just going to shut up about that. But it is nice that you can sort of crawl under the duvet and get yourself comfortable and go to sleep a little earlier maybe. You know, that's those are the benefits of winter.
The worst thing is when you get into the duvet, you get all warm because you need to actually, like, warm up the duvet, and then you forget something outside, and you're like, shit, I have to get back out. And it's even 10 times colder when you get out of the duvet.
True.
And you get back in, and you need to start the warming process again.
Right.
But you know how they had recorded the highest global temperatures in history in the beginning of the year?
Uh-huh.
Does that mean that our winter will be less severe in terms of the cold, or does that not impact it at all?
Yeah, can there be a benefit to global warming?
I think it will be. I think it's likely it'll be less cold. Oh, I'm going to sneeze. There we go.
Yeah. Get it all out.
There we go. That's done. Oh, that's fantastic. You see, I love to share everything with you.
Thanks.
So considerate.
Isn't it nice? You can message us, as you know, on WeChat. You can call us on 0861-555-189. You could tweet us, too. At Cliff Central Comment. Pictures up on the screen right in front of me. A couple of funny pictures. Our own picture. It's back to reality. And there's a picture of Dr. Evil with a quotation marks. You know where he does that? It says, I'm here day after a holiday to do some work.
When is the next public holiday? That's like the dying question.
June 16.
June 16. But,
and it's a Wednesday.
Ooh.
So that's going to also split up the week. Anyway, hey, who's complaining?
That's a bit of a midweek.
Something. A month and a bit from now.
Right. In the meantime, we might actually have some five-day weeks.
Yes.
I mean, considering since the beginning of April, even end of March, because there was March 26th, which started this whole process, we've had very few five-day weeks. Think about it. How many days we come in to do this show, and it's been 4 days in the week. It's actually something else. I think if we were more productive people, like if South Africa was a more productive place, if we got more done in less time, we could have a four-day week and a three-day weekend. Wouldn't that be worth working for?
I'm down for that.
I'd love that. I'd squeeze so much into those 4 days just so I could have an extra day weekend.
Yeah, well, that would have to be the trick, isn't it? Is getting everyone to be productive, not just some.
Because, I don't know, there's some people who think that time spent equals work. But that doesn't really compute. It's about how much you get done in that time. Someone else said to me over the weekend, and I've been reading a lot about this recently, so maybe it's all over my mind at the moment. But this whole concept of what real wealth is. Wealth isn't how much money you've got in the bank, it's how much time you have.
How much? But we all have 24 hours in a day. We all have the same amount of time.
It's how much of that time is yours.
Oh.
It's how much of that time is time where you can decide to do with that time whatever you like. That's how you know you've got real wealth, is you have the opportunity to move your time around and to figure out how much time is purely for your own enjoyment, for your own use. You could use it for more work if that's what you're motivated by. You could use it to spend with your family. You could spend it with friends. You could spend it getting high. I don't care. But, I mean, if it's your time, you can decide. Right?
Yeah, but if you have more money, don't you automatically have more time available
to you? No, this is the amazing thing.
Because then a poor person doesn't have a choice. They have to go out and grunt every day. But if you're wealthy, you could decide, you know what, this week I'm spending in Paris because I can.
Well, you see, that's to do with money. But, I mean, how many people do you know that can actually just up and leave?
I personally don't know these people.
No. I don't hang
around in that circle.
I know a few, and they don't. They work. So they're also not wealthy then by that definition. I mean, they might have lots of money, but they can't leave because they've got so many things going on. They've got so many meetings with people and important things to do.
Yes.
Yeah, all that stuff, that they actually don't enjoy the time that they're around.
It's the freedom you have in your life.
There we go.
The freedom to decide what I want to do, where I want to do it, when I want to do it.
Right.
Ooh.
So.
Over the weekend, I watched a documentary called Dangerously Rich Billionaires. Dangerously Rich, because it talks about how it's actually not as fun to be a billionaire. Everybody's after you. You have to worry about kidnappings. some billionaires even have people monitor their social media for what posts they put up. Like, if they take a photo of a kid in a house, does it show where they're living or stuff like that? They constantly have to worry what their kids are doing.
Well, because everyone wants their money.
You see, that's why...
It's like living in a big safe with the door open.
Oh.
Because everyone... And can you imagine the number of people...
With a dollar
like,
card.
Look at this dude who's just won this Please Call Me case that we spoke about last week, right?
Yeah.
My new BFF.
Right. That's the point. He's everyone's new BFF. Can you imagine the dregs of his family that are dragging themselves into his house right now going, ah, well done in the case. By the way, I need a fridge. Mm. Or, hey, well done in the case. By the way, my aunt has got cancer. You got to help with the treatment. Well done in the case. I need a car. Can you imagine all these people who are asking him for things?
And if he has kids who are young and also have money passed on from him to the kids, they're going to be targeted by like NGOs and stuff.
Everybody wants the money.
And it sucks because, you know, if he decides to say no to all these family members who are going to creep out the woodwork, he's going to have to deal with feeling horrible for saying no.
And who can he still be around? Who can he still trust? Because even though, yeah, well, that's
he
it.
Can
yeah. No, but you see, that's the point. Why would you suddenly be his friend?
He's going to need extra intentions. Security at his house now.
Yeah.
People are going to try and hijack him and hold him for ransom.
I mean, listen, we often talk about this, but really, these are the things that make your life good or bad. His life up to now, he didn't have a lot of money. He was fighting Vodacom for, what, I think it's 12 years. But during that time, he could walk over the neighbors. He could come over and visit him. He could hop in his car and drive somewhere and not worry about it. Now suddenly, everywhere he goes, he's got a big dollar sign on his back.
And all the young girls who are looking for blessers, all of a sudden they're going to have their radar out on him.
Yeah, and his poor wife, who's been loyal to him the whole time, who invented the Please Call Me for.
She's going to have to deal with women throwing themselves at her husband now at a higher rate.
Trashy women who just want his money.
Yeah.
They put up the highest ransoms that were ever paid for billionaires whose like children got abducted and they wanted money in return for the child. I think the highest was $130 million by an Indian family.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, a Chinese family, there was $100 million. It's ridiculous how much billionaires like actually have to fear for their own lives.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's why I'd like to be just like the inventor of something ridiculous. You know, like the Spanx. That woman is now a billionaire.
Yeah, but nobody knows her name.
We don't know her name.
Right.
You know, it's nothing someone would kill you for. It's Spanx. It's just like something women wear underneath. You know, it's not like I created an atom bomb and everyone wants to know me. Just want to have my little farm.
Flax, I don't know if the WeChat messages are working or not. Because they're at the same point that they were yesterday. And I'm absolutely sure that can't be right. So just figure it out for me.
Let me get right onto that.
Thank you. All right. I suppose it was Workers' Day. On Sunday, so we got yesterday as a bonus. Mm. You know, when a public holiday falls on a Sunday, then you get the Monday, which I've never really understood. Like, surely if the Sunday is the holiday, you get the Sunday.
Well, we all just want to sleep in.
Why does Sunday get special treatment? If it's on any other day, you just get that day.
You know,
it falls on a Wednesday, you go, oh, well, I've got Thursday as a bonus. What makes Sunday so special?
Any excuse for us not to have to wake up for work, I tell you.
Yeah.
That's what most people feel.
Oh, definitely. But I did see the parts of the EFF launch on their manifesto launch on Saturday. It looked like they drew a huge crowd, 40-odd thousand people at Orlando Stadium. And the whole crew were there. It was so weird seeing Julius and Floyd, and then right behind them, Dalimpofu. And I'm like, hey, it's my lawyer.
Hello, old friend.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, I hope you don't mess up. It was cool. It was very, very cool. You know what? There's stuff going on overseas at the moment. The U.S. elections are warming up. We'll check in on what's going on over there.
I see.
I mean, I say it's warming up, but it's only November. And it's May now. We've got a long way to go before these elections roll around, and yet they don't seem like they're going to quieten down anytime soon. If anything, they're ramping up. You see?
I mean, Donald Trump is back to his old self again.
Yeah.
You know, saying the things that that secures him a headline, a news headline.
He's a genius. I'm starting to think he may be the cleverest guy that has ever run for president. I really mean that. I'm starting to think that this guy is actually capable of doing things that no politician before him has been. He might just be the best thing for America. I mean, I say that in some weird, twisted way, because I would never have believed that there would be a time where I'd have to take him seriously. You know, we've always laughed about how orange he is and how horrible his hair is, if it is his hair, and how bizarre his ideas are. And it might just happen. It's not impossible. And if it isn't him, it's going to be boring old Hillary and more of the same. I don't know if you saw President Barack Obama's White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Why do you say no?
You know my stance on this. With certain professions, I think there's a certain stature and expectations that are necessary. When you are the president, you don't need to prove yourself. You don't need to be talking about Kendall Jenner. And here you are as the leader of the free world. You try to be all cool and down with the kids by saying Obama out. No, dude.
Well, then you're going to love this clip that's doing the rounds, where apparently the Queen and Prince Harry and the Obamas have been doing this back and forth play thing, and it seems to be going viral. And the Queen and Prince Harry have also jumped in on that bandwagon.
Find it for you.
Oh, this just kills me. I know I might be backward. I might be conservative with this.
Very conservative, Sia.
But why? Why are you now... You know, I just see no point. You are the president. Just wear your suit, make sure and reassure your country that everything is fine, and walk off. That's all you need to do. It's not a cool competition.
You don't think that they should have a little personality in there?
Why was Nene Leakes from the desperate house, from what's it called? Housewives, where those women just like beat each other all the time on reality TV.
Real Housewives.
Invited to the White House.
Listen to this here.
Oh.
Because Harry's sitting with the Queen, and he's telling her about the Invictus Games, all right?
Yes.
Okay, so the Invictus Games are these games where soldiers who've lost a limb or they've returned from war in some way, scarred, broken, they compete in these games. And it's America versus Britain.
Okay.
So the Queen is sitting with Harry in Windsor Castle, and he's busy showing her this card. All right?
This is quite close, isn't it?
Message. And then Harry's phone starts making that sound.
Of course.
And he goes, it's from Michelle. How very amusing.
Watch together?
Yes.
Let's have a look.
They watch.
Hey, Prince Harry, remember when you told us to bring it at the Invictus Games?
Careful what you wish for.
Boom.
Oh, really? Please.
Boom.
Oh, really?
Please.
So that's the Queen and Harry. I mean, look, I like that we live in a world where we can actually see this kind of thing. Before, these people were so removed from us that we thought they had powers that they don't.
That they absolutely don't.
Right.
And that's maybe the thing is...
You know, they were always sitting in important meetings, doing important things. Here's this little old lady in a cardigan sitting next to her grandson, and they're joking about how the Americans have no chance of beating them. Oh, please. That's cool. You don't like it? You want them to be special.
This is, okay, maybe this might be a bit of a weird comparison, but it's just like seeing a school teacher twerking in a short skirt. Do you know what I mean?
I used to have teachers who would do that kind of thing. They just hoped they would never get caught.
No, but there are just certain professions where certain things are expected. And when you now see a preschool teacher who will be, you know, moonlighting as a stripper over the weekends, would that go down... well with you?
Yeah, I don't care what a preschool teacher does when she's not at school.
I don't care what anybody does, really.
I don't think the school teacher twerking in a small skirt was a good analogy. I think better would be, imagine the Queen telling a knock-knock joke and you're compelled to laugh. It's just really awkward.
Yeah, and that's the opposite end of the spectrum, where you have to be respectful of these people for some bizarre traditional reason.
I just felt awkward, and I had to agree with what the parody she did was funny. I don't even know if it was funny or not. Just because it's the Queen, I had to laugh.
Well, because it's you know, you don't expect it. Anyway, look, we got lots to get through today. We've got an interesting guest popping by later. You know, a lot of people talk about the Cape. And they say, oh, it's such a beautiful place. And Cape Town is the most wonderful place in South Africa to live. That may be true. I don't know. But the reality of Cape Town is that there are two Cape Towns. There's that Cape Town, which is beautiful. It's filled with tourists. There's lots of money. People live in great houses. They have interesting lives. They have natural beauty around them. And then there's the Cape Flats, where you could be killed by gangsters. It's the most violent place in this country. Did you know that?
Oh, well, some
more
of the
murders, more drug problems than anywhere else.
The stats, they don't lie.
So we're going to speak to a guy called Dan Pinnock later on. Don Pinnock. And he's going to tell us about Cape Town as Gang Town. It's his new book. He's an investigative journalist. And if anybody's ever been interested in what really goes on in these two different Cape Towns, this is the guy to talk to. So I'm looking forward to speaking to him. He's also involved with a number of really interesting charities and a whole lot of organizations that do good all over South Africa. So I think it might be really exciting to hear his perspective on things. That's coming up. We'll also speak to Romo and Jonathan. They raised money for that waitress who was abused by that Roads Must Fall dude. And in 2 days, they managed to raise an astonishing amount of money for... I mean, they didn't campaign. They just created the account and asked people if they wanted to help this girl. Turns out this girl's mother is dying of cancer. She doesn't even have a permanent home. She was just a working-class girl trying to earn money at a cafe waitressing. And she got abused by this punk. So they decided to set things right, and it seems that decency and civility won the day against, postulating.
I've seen they've started without even wanting to, like a social media trend. Everyone is just tipping their waiters massive amounts to help out their waiters.
Yeah.
Just for, like someone who posts up a photo, amazing service, loved his smile, and they gave him, like, 300 grand.
Well, we'll talk about this a bit later on, but I don't see how being nice can ever be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't see how being kind or being generous can ever be a bad move. I don't see how that can hurt humanity in any way. And I don't see how it can prevent progress and an improvement in the lives of everybody. To me, kindness and generosity, these are the two things, by the way, that they've already identified, are the two reasons that people stay together in relationships, kindness and generosity. The only two things. Everything else can fall by the wayside. Sex, having common interests, physical appearance, all of that stuff can fall away. And if you're kind and generous with each other, your relationship will make it. So I don't see why this shouldn't be spread further and wider to encompass everybody and everything. And if you're just a rude and bad-mannered and uncivilized person who puts your own political ideas ahead of treating people decently, well, then you can't occupy the moral high ground. That's the way I see it. And there are a lot of people who evidently agree with me. Because this waitress, at the end of the day, may end up with over 100,000 rand. That's one hell of a tip, huh?
Oh, yes.
That's a big tip.
So next time someone abuses you, don't be so hurt by it. Maybe you're just around the corner. There's a big tip. You never know. It's quite an interesting way of looking at things. All right, when we come back, we'll have a little bit of the money. We're not going to look at sport this morning, are we? Should we just leave it and tell Ben we did it?
I see that Leicester won the Premier League on odds of 5,000 to 1.
Can't we just tell Ben we did the sport?
Yeah, well, that's what we'll say. We'll say, hey, Ben, that Leicester win was great.
Yeah, let's
and then
do
we'll,
that.
We'll sound like we knew what we were talking about.
Right. We'll rather get into a little news a bit earlier this morning because we've got lots of things happening from 7 o'clock. Let's talk about all the stuff. You decide what you want to talk about. How about you tell me what you want? 0861-555-189, all right? You get to decide, and I mean that. The first person to tell me what we're doing gets to determine what we do after 6:30. Call me now.
The Jozi Urban Trail and Obstacle Run is back on the 28th of May. Challenge your friends. Challenge your family. Enter the 12 or 18 kilometer adventure or 6 kilometer fun run. Whether you want the scenic route or the adventurous route, the choice is yours. With nothing stopping you, it's go time. The Hollard Jura, brought to you by AdReach and Joburg City Parks and Zoo. Enter at jozieadventure.co.za.
Did you know that bureaucratic corruption, or petty corruption is when the public and public officials get together and take money from the state in small amounts that no one notices, but causes big damage in the long term. This anti-corruption segment is brought to you by Expose It, a platform where you can safely and easily report bribery and corruption. Report via our website, www.exposeit.org.za, or with your phone by dialing *134*1105#.
CliffCentral.com. It is the 3rd of May already. Can you believe that? 6:30, well, just after, actually coming up to 2:15 already. Here's an email I just want to get to, and then I'll get to Chris's call and a bunch of other stuff. From Nobile, who's really been listening to us for a long time. Nobile says, I love your show as always, and other podcasts, also like the Renegade Report. Is this the one that Nobile said? Oh, yeah, here we go. I feel like we're justifying the presence and existence of politicians not only in this country, but in the world. I agree with you that politicians are a waste of resources. Why are we as humans still subjecting ourselves to such abuse by politicians? We've been systematically programmed to think democracy is real, and we must elect some charismatic individual to lead us. Such nonsense must not be tolerated. What we need is critical thinkers. We need doers and individuals who are productive, and if they are not productive, we must kick them out. Yesterday, I was talking to an EFF member, and I realized that this party is an opportunistic farce. I suggested to her that if the EFF and any other party was truly for the people, then they should not be paid a salary. They don't handle any money. They're just here to serve the people. Her response was what I expected. She said, "We need salaries because I need to eat and advance my family." My response was, "You chose to help the people first, therefore you sacrifice those liberties, and once everyone you fight for has a salary, then you can get one also." She laughed and brushed off the response, and I saw this time that this is a tragedy. We're a society programmed not to be critical thinkers. The ANC, DA, and EFF supporters are prime examples. So that's from Nobile this morning. How do you like that?
I mean, in theory and on paper, yes, it sounds great, but how are you about to undo a system that's been in existence for how long? I mean,
Since the ancient Greeks.
Since the ancient Greeks. That's not something that we can just dismantle and get rid of in the next couple of days.
Of course we can. Look at how.
How? How do we actually get rid of politicians in this country? Where do we begin?
There used to be libraries. There used to be workhouses, there used to be slavery, there used to be all kinds of stupid systems that have been around since the dawn of time, and we tore them down. And now we have better things and better ways. I think Obile might be onto something. I think really she might be making a very, very good point.
I agree, it's a good point. It's just the actual doing would probably be very messy. Can you imagine the resistance by the politicians when we tell
them
that we don't want you?
You can see more and more the power rests with us, so I'm ready for the fight. Aren't you?
Then let's go to war!
Let's go to war! All right, listen, we got to get to Chris. He's called us, and calls get priority. Hey, Chris. Chris, are you there? Flex, I don't know what's going on here. Chris, hello? Hello? No, definitely not working. I hate it when that happens. It's such a downer because you build up to it. You're like, I wonder what Chris is going to say. And then he's not there. All right, well, Mubs, shall we start off with some news? I mean, we may as well. It's unorthodox, but then we do just say we were going to break the rules, right?
Okay.
So we don't need to do things at exactly the time that we said we would do them. Let's get straight into it this morning. Nice and early, we'll take a break in the middle of the news for Anthea. How lovely.
Well, I'll tell you what Mr. Tokyo Sekgwale was doing over the weekend. He got into some writing, and so he wrote an open letter to AJ Gupta.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I read it.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you know what it's about. let me just read the opening paragraph for you and then the last paragraph. Dear AJ, the current tumultuous situation in our country, South Africa, around your Gupta name, family and business entities, also affecting that of President Zuma, the government and party, is akin to a political hurricane steadily sweeping around the land. Very long letter where he basically raises concern over the Guptas and, you know, where the current ANC government in terms of its leadership finds itself mm-hmm. or has allowed themselves to end up with regards to this family. And then he concludes and says, this is a time for a hard look at matters. It is a time for serious lessons to be learned. This is a time for cohesion and unity, in as much as it is also time for vigilance, so that someday, when history is recorded, Jill said that the whole sorry saga was resolved without any resort to breaking up this organization of our people for the good of all South Africans.
He's basically saying what all of us want. It's like, just sort yourselves out. You Guptas need to get out of business with government, and you need to be legitimate. It's like, I was watching Godfather. One of the greatest movies, right?
The classics.
The whole plan for Michael Corleone was to get his family into legitimate business. They weren't involved in the criminal underworld. They weren't involved in drugs. He didn't want them involved in protectionism, racketeering. So he moved them into gambling, the casinos. Then he decided, and by Godfather 3, he doesn't even want to be in gambling anymore. Now he wants to be in straightforward trade. He wants to be in Immobiliare was the company that he wanted to be in, right? So he bought it in from the Vatican, so it would be so clean. I mean, ironically, that's the filthiest place of all. But yeah, you know, the deal is that you want to be legitimate. You want to have respect. When Michael was a gangster, no respect.
Just fear. Because, you know, people confuse the two.
Yeah, and people talk about you behind your back, and they don't really think of you as a pillar of the community. And then you clean yourself up, and you start making a difference in society, and he starts the Vito Corleone Association or Trust or whatever it is, and they help orphans and I don't know what else. But the whole point is you want to be legitimate. You don't want to have knives at your back. And if you're a gangster or you deal with government and you've got nefarious dealings with government, you never can sleep well at night because you never know what might change. Your business might be threatened. The people who you have influence over in government might be changed out for other people.
I still question this belief that you struggle to sleep at night. I think that if you don't have a conscience, you sleep just fine. You don't care.
Maybe, but I'd rather be Michael Corleone in Godfather 3 than Michael Corleone in Godfather 1. Except, of course, when his daughter gets shot at the end, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And by the way, spoiler alert, like 40 years or whatever.
Oh, speaking of spoiler alerts, so the second episode of Game of Thrones is available.
Don't.
No, I can't. We're not allowed to. Because the show only it airs properly on a Thursday night. It's just, you know, if you have catch-up, then you get it within, what, I think it's 24 hours after the...
Is that how it works? I haven't ever watched live TV for this.
24 hours or 1 hour after the US release? I can't remember. But yeah, technically it only airs on Thursday. Okay. But yes, the second episode is already available. And most people are downloading this stuff anyway. I mean, I was looking at figures last week about how the numbers are in the millions in terms of people watching Game of Thrones, not on television.
No one's waiting.
Tens of millions of people are just downloading
this. I can't even tell you how I would get Game. I don't know what channel it's on. I don't know what time it becomes released on catch-up or anything else. Who knows?
One of the Game of Thrones characters, the real life name is Maisie Williams. In the show, she does something like she's a girl but a guy disguised, something like that.
No, she's Sansa's younger sister, man. What's her name? The Stark girl.
Arya.
Arya Stark. Arya That's Stark. It. Thank you, man.
She's now making the funniest YouTube videos for Game of Thrones. So
oh, really?
In one YouTube video, she'll go to like an antique store, like one of those... stores where they sell the comic books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Game of Thrones will advertise that they're giving away free merchandise. And the people go to the store and she's there giving away the free merchandise. And they're like, don't I recognize you? And she's like, no, lots of people think I'm Macy from Game of Thrones or whatever. And then she makes them do the funniest things, like act like you're a dragon flying around the room to get this. And in another YouTube video, this fraternity, they won like Game of Thrones package, and then she goes and delivers it herself.
I'm looking at the list of the most popular downloads. Obviously, these are illegal downloads on the internet.
Mm.
You want to know what the top 10 are?
Yes.
Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. The number 10 is a movie, Batman vs. Superman. A lot of people downloading that. Number 9 is The Hateful Eight, new Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8 is DC Legends of Tomorrow, Season 1, Episode 6. 7, Game of Thrones, Season 6, Episode 1. That's last week's episode.
Yes.
5. No, sorry, 6. I left out 6. Is Kanye West's Life of Pablo,
oh,
the album.
Very good.
Yeah. Then at number 5, Ride Along. That's right up there. That's a movie too.
Yeah, Kevin Hart. And
correct. Number 4, Suits, Season 5, Episode 15.
Has Suits restarted?
Yeah, well, this is it. I'm totally out of that loop.
Sure,
I gave up on Suits. Then number 3, Game of Thrones, Season 6, Episode 2. Number 2, House of Cards, Season 4, Episode 2. And number 1, House of Cards, Season 4, Episode 1. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
So House of Cards is number 1 and 2, followed by Game of Thrones. It's quite something, huh? I think we should look at this list every week.
Yeah, because, I mean, House of Cards, they're kind of midway into that season, aren't mm-hmm. they already?
Well, they released the whole season, remember? So you can binge watch it. They released the whole thing.
Oh.
It must be a Netflix thing then, because that's
is,
their
yeah.
style.
It is, correct. Yeah, it's produced by Netflix. It's their thing. It's their show.
I much prefer this binge watching where they release the full season.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to wait.
No one wants to wait. This Game of Thrones waiting week after week is a killer. I don't want it. I don't like it. Mubs, what else is in the news?
Gareth, Eskom are hoping for a load shedding free winter this year. You remember those deep dark days of load shedding?
So are we.
Eskom says that the country has not experienced load shedding for the past 9 months. Did you know that?
No.
The power utility is optimistic. They're optimistic that this winter will be free from any load shedding if planned maintenance continues without any hitches. Now, what we don't know about what's happening behind the scenes is that Eskom takes advantage of long weekends, just like the one that we've just come out of.
Yeah.
And that is when they do what they call opportunistic maintenance.
Anything with Eskom that's opportunistic, I'm nervous about.
It puts you on edge a little bit. But yeah, they do this because there is usually a small demand on the system over a long weekend. So I guess we're not using as much electricity on long weekends. Because we're probably out and, you know, brying
yeah,
or
and having
we're
sex, so
drunk.
We don't need warmth.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what they do over long weekends is this opportunistic maintenance. The Parastatal has been carrying out maintenance on its generating units as part of its winter preparation plan, which they started last month. They say that the country has not experienced load shedding for the past 9 months. And
No.
They're hopeful that they will be able to meet the country's power demands throughout the winter.
Very good.
Yeah, that's what we want to hear from you, Eskom.
Thank you, Eskom.
Just good news.
I can't believe that we're saying thank you for you for just doing your job.
I know. And we're
so grateful.
We're so grateful that we haven't had load shedding for the past 9 months.
Like when government actually managed to do something right and we go, oh, thank you, government. Oh, that's so great. That's just what that's the basic thing they were meant to do. Anyway, it's time for Anthea. Let's check in with her and find out about whatever little bits of money you have, what you could do to have more of it, and if you've got very little, how you could grow that too. Anthea Gardner. She works hard for the money.
She works hard for the money. So hard.
Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, Gareth. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Gareth, before I tell you about the market, can I just take a moment, because it was your birthday yesterday and I missed it.
Yes, thank you.
But I was thinking about my favorite part of doing this money shot, by the way. And, you know, I still get emails from listeners, like, weekly, asking about how to save, where to be invested. And I don't always get to them immediately, I must admit. But I do love getting those emails, I must tell you.
Cool.
So, really enjoying it still.
I'm glad.
And happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, on Friday, the market closed 70 basis points down on about $1.4 billion worth of trade. But for the month, the all share was up 2.7%. And then on Friday, the Rand tested the best levels for the year, touching 14.12. Two things there. The first is that we got some positive trade numbers, so we actually printed a surplus. And then it also strengthened after the reinstatement of the corruption charges against Jacob Zuma.
Again, proving this inverse correlation between the president's fortunes and the fortunes of the Rand.
We'll just keep watching, right?
Right.
And then something odd happened. Tiger Brands' chief financial officer resigned on Friday. She didn't give a reason for it. I would have thought that Peter Matari fell on his sword over the 1.5 billion rand loss from the Nigeria mill scam. I would have thought that would be sufficient, but apparently not.
Huh.
So Lawrence McDougall, the new CEO, starts next week, actually. So the timing's a bit strange. The share was marginally up on Friday, about 1.5%. Year to date, the share is up 16% compared to last year when the share was down 14%. So this obvious change at the top and this writing off of the Nigerian mill business has done the share a bit of good. Investors liking that, obviously.
Okay.
And then a little bit of bad news. Coronation was under pressure on Friday. The share closed down almost 6%. It put out a trading statement saying that diluted headline earnings per share for the first half of their financial year would be between 0 and 10% lower than last year. So this is a share that started last year at 115 Rand per share and is now trading at 75 Rand a share. I mean, they have had two fairly big bad calls, you know. So in 2014, they were invested in Able, the African bank.
Mm-hmm. That was a
and
disaster.
And then second, that was a very odd one because some of their funds had sold their shares in African Bank and some of their funds actually held African Bank papers. So it was very strange, as if the company, the two departments weren't talking to each other. And that's what happens when you get big, huh?
Yeah, you forget then, what's going on in other departments.
Mm-hmm. And then secondly, last year they were fairly heavily invested in resources. And so their top 20 fund underperformed hugely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's such a difficult one to judge because they now manage 606 billion rand. And if you're that big, I think it's very hard to generate returns above the market, or alpha, as we call it. Mm. You pretty much are the market when you're trading, and you really can't be invested in the small shares that have made lots of money for us, you know, the Brait, for example.
Sure.
It's difficult because they would move the market.
Now, that's interesting because I've always thought that, you know, fund managers and these funds that trade so much, that you guys would be on top of these things and that you'd probably never make a huge loss. You'd always kind of either keep it on even, so more or less just keep your money where it is, or make money. But evidently, that's not always true. One or two bad calls can really affect the whole fund very badly.
Exactly. Coronation's testament to that, actually. Yeah.
Sure.
And it is very difficult. So the smaller you are, the easier it is because you're flexible. You know, so Coronation's like a big ship trying to turn.
Mm.
Whereas the smaller funds tend to be able to make calls quickly, and so they do generate alpha quicker. And it's always a trick because we get paid by how much money we manage. So you obviously, to make more money, you want to manage more money. But I think for me, at one stage, I'm going to have to close my fund and say, okay, I've reached a level where I'm happy where it is, and I don't really want to be the next Coronation, you know, so that I can stay flexible and nimble in the market.
Now, how does that work? Because I would imagine a huge fund, if you control that much money, you can affect the market very deliberately, and sometimes not necessarily to anyone's advantage except yours.
Oh, no. It's quite the opposite, actually. So if you think about it, if a company like Tiger Brands has a statement that you weren't expecting, so suddenly they've got this Nigerian operation which has a fraudulent backing behind it. They've opened the warehouse. There's nothing in it. And you're sitting on Tiger Brands' share. And as a big fund, you now need to sell, let's call it, 100 million rands worth of shares.
Sure.
As you sell, the market is going lower and lower and the share is falling. So you're selling at a lower price and thereby making a loss as the market falls. Does that make sense?
Let's go through it again. I'm not sure I understand.
Okay, so let's say I was holding Tiger Brand. So Coronation was holding Tiger Brand shares.
All right.
At 100 rand a share. And they come out with an announcement. Say I've got 100 shares. They've got 100 million shares.
Right.
For me to sell 100 shares is easy. And I can sell my 100 shares at 100 rand or 99 rand. Mm-hmm. No problem. But for Coronation, the more they sell, the lower they sell the price down. So they're actually, as they're selling, they're pushing the price down because bids disappear. People don't want to buy these shares.
Wow, okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah, and so they just keep printing a loss. And the reverse is true for when they're buying. So if I want to go, the share's trading at 100 rand, and there's some announcement, I can quickly go in and buy at 100 rand. But as Coronation needs to buy 100 million shares, let's say, the shares just keep moving up and up on this good news, and they're eventually paying 110 rand for a share that I paid 100 rand for.
So bigger is not better?
No, not in this case, it's not.
Okay, that's interesting. That's something I really didn't know. Okay, very good.
It's the technicalities of trading. And then talk about asset management businesses. So the Sage of Omaha, Warren Buffett spoke this weekend.
I know. Tamsin had us all excited about this. No, I didn't. I didn't listen to him. Should I have? What did he say?
Very quickly, I'll tell you in short. So Berkshire Hathaway produced net earnings number, which is the after-tax number of $5.6 billion versus last year's $5.1 billion. So he's made a nice little improvement on his earnings number. He did point out that there was some volatility in these numbers and that the insurance business had taken quite a knock because they had what he called abnormal catastrophic claims because of hailstorms. So they had more claims than usual. And then talk about kind of the asset management business. He criticized hedge funds because he says they investors are paying fees for mediocre performance. Now, I really like that because he's a supporter of Hillary Clinton. And a couple of weeks ago, she tweeted that the top U.S. hedge fund managers earn more than all the teachers in the country.
Wow.
To which the, which is very true, to which the GS Elevator, the Goldman Sachs uncensored Twitter account, responded that she made more money in one speaking engagement than a teacher does in a year.
Yeah.
If you don't follow GS Elevator's Twitter account, you must go and look it up. They've got some perlers, really very clever, insightful stuff.
Absolutely. No, they're very, very funny.
It's kind of Goldman Sachs's uncensored account.
Now, all bankers like Goldman Sachs's uncensored Twitter accounts? Are they horrible people who say these things wherever they can?
No, I don't know. Bankers. I used to be a banker. I can't criticize.
Yeah, but they have a reputation. Come on, Anthea, tell me the
truth. This is true. And, of course, what Warren Buffett's doing with these hedge fund managers, because what happens when you're a good investment banker and you're very clever with trading, you go off and you start either an asset management or a hedge fund.
Right.
And Warren Buffett is saying that these hedge funds, they're kind of the smartest guys in the room, in inverted commas, and they charge 2% and 20%. So if you invest money with them, they will charge you 2% per annum just for having money with them. And they will charge you 20% of profits that they make. So they will share the profits with you, basically, and charge you this 20%, which can be extraordinarily huge.
But Warren Buffett says that it's a diminishing return and they're not actually doing their job.
That's what he's saying. In fact, he made a bet with a company called Protege Partners, who invest in hedge funds. And he said that they could not beat the Vanguard, which is a mutual fund, kind of like our unit trust, for example, which tracks the S&P 500 index, which is just the market, basically.
Yeah.
The bet is that the winner will donate $1 million to their charity of choice at the end of next year. So far, the hedge funds have returned 22% since they started this bet 8 years ago, until the end of last year. And the S&P index has returned 66%. So Warren Buffett might be quite on the money.
That's not good for the hedge fund people.
No. There is definitely a place for hedge funds, and I think we should talk about it in depth a bit more one day.
All right, very good.
Not today.
What can we look forward to this week?
So the U.S. closed higher last night, but Asia's a bit mixed this morning. Japan's closed for Constitution Day, and China's already released fairly disappointing manufacturing data. So where our market goes is anyone's guess today. I'm hoping higher on the back of the U.S. close last night.
Cool. All right, Anthony,
all right,
thank
then.
You. Thanks very
have
much.
Have a good day, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.
And you. There we go. She's our own Warren Buffett, Anthea Gardner. All right, Mubs, what else is in the news?
Now, you know I love Japan, right? One of the many reasons that I love them is because they're just so weird. But, you know, that's what I like. For example, in Japan, they have these hotels that are set up to service parents who basically get sick of their children. So if you feel like having a night out with the mother of your child or the father of your child, you can arrange for the kids to be taken care of. And then you go to these hotels that are specially built for that reason. It's for you and the parents to go in and just like get time out from your kids.
Beautiful.
I'm sick of you. Time out. I'm going. I'm gone.
Parents love that. Parents love nothing more than just getting rid of their kids for a short amount of time so they can spend time together.
Oh, sure.
It's like
now,
a holiday.
Now there is an interesting service that has been set up and is running in Japan. It's Japan's corpse hotels.
What?
Which are apparently upsetting some of the neighbors. So the problem with Japan is that crematories, right, where bodies get cremated.
Crematoria?
Yeah, those things, they don't have enough of them going around, and they also need to build more of them because Japan's population is dying off at a quicker rate today than it ever has, right?
They're getting older and they're not, yeah.
They're getting older, so they're dying off quicker, so they cannot keep up with the numbers of cremating people because people, like, there aren't enough of these places to cremate the bodies.
Right.
So what happens is that you have these bodies of people that essentially pile up. Okay. They pile up and they have to go through a waiting period, which sometimes runs for like 4 days long, where you're basically waiting for your relative to find a spot so that they can be cremated. So what they've decided to do is they've decided to build corpse hotels. And basically what these hotels do is you store your relative in the hotel until they eventually do find space to be processed and to be cremated.
You just store them in a hotel?
In a corpse hotel, Garrett.
But I mean like in a fridge, right?
Well, look, there are a number of these businesses that have been popping up all over the place, and yes, some of them will store corpses in the fridge, but one particular corpse hotel, it's called Soso, or it's in Soso.
Oh my God.
The neighbors who live directly behind the hotel are complaining because this hotel doesn't operate with fridges, they just have air conditioning.
Oh! You mean a whole lot of dead people in this building just waiting to be put in the ground?
Waiting to be cremated.
Burnt up, yeah.
At a daily rate of 9,000 yen per family.
Wow.
Members can keep their deceased relatives.
Daily rate?
Yes. Death is not cheap. No, death is not cheap.
I just throw them in the sea for that. Come on. 9,000 yen a day?
Take it back to the old school days where you would just send your dead relative's body down the river.
And in Japan, the custom is that you need to be cremated. They don't like to bury their dead.
Yes, cremation is a big thing.
Why? It takes up too much space.
Oh, but I'm just thinking about the smell.
Well,
this
is precisely why this specific corpse hotel is in the news, because a lot of the neighbors that live in the vicinity of the hotel are saying, at the very least, like, upgrade your air conditioning, because now we're having to deal with the smell of rotting corpses as they wait their turn to be cremated. So yes, 9,000 yen per day, and members can keep their deceased relative in one of Soso's 10 rooms for up to 4 days until a crematorium can be found.
Jeez.
Unlike other such morgues in disguise, which try to blend in by looking like hotels, So-so doesn't refrigerate corpses. They rely on air-conditioned rooms instead.
I can't believe people do that. That's only unreal.
As Japan ages, its people are dying off at a faster pace. About 20,000 more people per year are expiring, with the death rate expected to peak at about 1.7 million a year by the year 2040.
Soon there'll be like 20 people left in Japan.
Soon there'll be 20 people left in Japan. And don't the, I mean, young people in Japan, they're not quick to get married and to start families, as far as I understand.
They're struggling. A lot of these young couples are not even able to, they're not fertile enough. The decision to rather not have kids sometimes trumps the decision to have kids. And, you know, they want to start a career. They want to be together. They don't want to have children slow them down.
Yeah.
This is inevitable for the developed world.
Wow.
For the developed world, I mean, this is a problem in Scandinavia, too. In Scandinavia, you have grandmothers who actually buy holidays for their grandchildren to have sex on.
So that they can have children.
Right. So a grandma will pay for you to go on a sex holiday. She'll put money in an account that you then spend on a holiday to like a Spanish island or whatever, so that you can go there and meet some girl and get her pregnant. Just so they can increase the birth rate. It's so low at the moment. Isn't that incredible?
That's quite extreme, because what you could do is keep going on these holidays but just use contraceptives and be like, oh, well, it's a free holiday. Let's go.
The way Earth's going at the moment, there'll be no Japanese people left, no Northern Europeans left. It'll all be everyone else. So we better get breeding.
Ooh, Live Aid will be doing concerts for the Japanese now.
Can you imagine?
In this hotel for the dead, it allows visitors. So what you do is you phone in, you set a time and a day, and what they do is they go fetch the body, they take it to a viewing room, they open up the casket, and you go take a seat, and you, like, respect the dead.
A visit for what? But, like, Aunt Patsy's gone. You can't feed her pudding. She's gone.
Yeah,
but you know...
And she smells now.
Yeah, but you know, I mean...
Viewing room,
The Japanese probably look at our customs and they think, how weird is that they're putting people in the ground? Like, that's some weird behavior. They're looking at us thinking the exact same thing.
Okay, true.
I would be... I just have to go to Japan. I think it's a fascinating place. Never been.
I want to go so badly.
Very badly.
Yeah, no, I have no ambition at all.
Not?
No. And very far away from the Corpse Hotel as well. Well, right. Here's someone who we can all just shake our head at, basically. A teenager has shot himself in the head while taking a gun selfie. That's where the world is headed. This teenage boy...
This happens all the time.
He's lucky to be alive, really, after he shot himself in the head while
he's still alive?
Oh, yeah. Sadly so, clearly.
Shot himself in the head and he's still alive?
Exactly. Ramanan Deep Singh, that's his name, from India, was attempting to take a selfie with his sister. While pointing a licensed revolver to his head, the gun went off and the 15-year-old was rushed to hospital with critical injuries. The revolver belonged to his father, and so he's now currently still in hospital. We don't know progress about that. But this story actually prompted me to find out, you know, statistics about, like, what is actually going on with this whole selfie thing. And it's actually surprising because last year alone, in 2015, more people died from selfies than we did from shark attacks.
Well, it's because you have people doing dumb stuff, right? So people will get on the edge of a cliff and then they'll think, ooh, this will make a cool selfie. And then when they're reaching for their phone, they slip and fall to their death.
Oh, yeah.
It's those kinds of... things that happen.
So in 2015, there were 16 recorded cases of people trying to take selfies and they died from falling from heights. 14 people died from drowning. What sort of selfie were you trying to take and then you drown?
Those new underwater phones.
Oh, okay. Kind of stupid. 8 people died from a train selfie.
Yep. I'm happy to hear this. I don't know that this is bad.
4 people died from gunshot selfies. 2 people died from car crash selfies. This I don't understand. 2 people died from grenade selfies.
Yeah,
what were you trying to do?
No, but, see, have you seen those YouTube clips of people who set themselves on fire, for example? People are doing dumb stuff every day on this planet.
Please remind me, I have a story about that. Okay, I'll tell you a little later. Two people died from a plane crash selfie, and one person died from an animal-related selfie. So take that, Kim Kardashian, look at what you're doing to the world. Can I talk about this fire story as well, since you're sort of on it? This would freak the bejesus out of me. A patient in a New York City hospital was set alight during surgery.
Ha!
Well, you would know.
That would kill me.
That's a nice lawsuit that set itself up.
But you wouldn't know, would you? I mean, you wouldn't feel it.
And well, this is supposedly very common, though.
Was he under?
He was under, and it's basically believed because in an operation environment, there's higher than normal oxygen levels in the room.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the whole procedure and all those
things. Then obviously combustion takes place a lot more easily.
And so he just gets
caught fire.
I made a mistake, and I apologize for it.
I heard this is one of the main reasons when you go in for surgery, they make you take off all your clothes, including your underpants, and they make you wear those, like, fake nappy sort of things the overall thing because of catching a light.
Oh, my God.
They are believed to be between five... today I'm just a guy with numbers and statistics, clearly. There's believed to be between 550 and 650 operating room fires a year in the United States alone due to oxygen levels. Ooh. Imagine, you're just going for your little, I don't know, getting your knee checked up, and then your doctors tell your family, yo.
Hey, speaking of oxygen levels, do you know what I watched over the weekend?
What?
Deadpool.
Finally.
Oh, I still haven't
finally
seen
got
that
to
movie.
See Deadpool. What a funny movie.
Brilliant.
Exactly.
Eh?
I loved it.
I wish I didn't sleep through 20 minutes of it.
You slept?
Yeah.
I was sitting next to Sia, and I looked to my left, and there he's just dozed off.
Shame, you must have had a rough day.
Yes.
Wow.
The last 20 minutes, you know, towards the end, so I have no idea what the climactic moment was.
Well, that's very interesting.
Did you guys ever watch the movie Awake, where the guy goes into surgery and he's under anesthetic and he feels everything, he's paralyzed? That is what scares me when going under anesthetic the most.
People are so sick.
Imagine you're awake, you feel every pain and you can't move or you can't say anything.
No, I would hate that. That would be the most terrifying. Have you ever woken up in your bed and you can't, you feel like you can't move?
Yeah, you need
that
like
I'm even scared
seconds.
Of. I've never experienced that. Mm-hmm. What is it called?
I don't know.
Isn't it sleep paralysis?
Something like that. It's horrifying.
It is. Ooh. It's not a nice feeling.
Or when you're dreaming and it feels so real and you just start screaming out loud in your dream, but you're actually doing it in real life. And then you wake up from screaming.
Well, those people who also feel like they're falling.
Had that before.
In a dream. And then they wake up and they're like, oh my God. You know, and terrifying things happen. And some dreams are so real that your heart rate increases. And you get adrenaline pumping through your veins. And
have you guys ever been killed in a dream? Because I've had a dream where just before I die, I wake up. I've never actually fully like, been killed in a dream.
Yeah, there are these dream people who will tell you that means something. I don't know what it means, but a lot of people apparently experience that.
I remember someone trying to explain to me dreams, and one of the scenarios was if you have sex with your mother in a dream, what it means.
Oh, my God.
I forgot what it means, but it was
weird.
Wow,
that would be horrible.
Oh.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who supposedly know what these things mean, but none of them can be. They can't be right. It's not possible.
It stems from somewhere, though. That I strongly believe.
If you look at the brain, for example, and if you were to think of it as some kind of a computer, like a machine, even when you're sleeping, your brain never shuts down completely. So there's all sorts of stuff still happening in there while you're asleep, and that's all it is.
It's busy filing memories.
It isn't some kind of mythical or divine explanation. It's just your brain is still functioning while you're sleeping.
Correct.
So then how do you explain that, you know, what
you're
you guys
not
are
driving
talking about?
That. You're not consciously driving that function. So some other part of your subconscious is taking over and it's controlling the flow of information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how dreams happen.
Right.
It's like some kind of filing system that the one psychologist explained to me.
And with sleep paralysis and when you can actually feel your chest feeling heavy and you feel
I think that probably is that your motor and sensory switches have not yet gone on. And if they haven't gone on at the same time. So you wake up, you're aware of what's going on, but you haven't, your motor brain hasn't yet been switched on properly. It's like in the middle of a reboot. And you're like, oh, I can't move. Oh my God, I'm dying.
System failure.
It's like having the hourglass or wheel of death on your computer. Like it's still processing. And you're like, no, get me out of here. Get
Very
me
strange.
Out of here.
In my religion, Judaism, they say when you sleep, your soul leaves your body and goes to heaven. And then when you wake up, it returns.
Well, what happens if it gets lost on the way to returning?
Yeah.
We hope not.
Then you're just an empty vessel. You're just lying there.
So with all of those things, I'm just like, yo, God, I hope you get the wrong number. Like, don't call me while I'm sleeping.
Just leave us alone.
Have bad network that day. Celsius not on your side, maybe, or something. Like, don't call me.
The WeChat messages are not working this morning, so if you've been trying to get hold of us for some reason on there, that's why I'm not ignoring you. I just can't read them. And you can get hold of us on Twitter, if you would like, at cliffcentral.com, or you can call us, 0861-555-189. I would suggest you try calling us, and then if that doesn't work, you can tweet us. I think those are probably the best ways to go this morning. It is 17 after 7. I want to talk about this whole tipping. It's called Tipping Gate, even though it's not much of a scandal. It seems that no good deed goes unpunished. And I want to talk to the guys from the Renegade Report, who, along with Sihleng Gwabese, decided to put things right after a young lady in Cape Town who was trying to earn a living and has her own personal challenges to deal with was just abused really horribly by a patron at a restaurant. It turns out this patron happens to be from the Roads Must Fall group. He's one of the guys who started it. And I think we need to talk about this, because it seems to me that there are a lot of political angles to this, but actually the only angle that really matters is whether you're a kind and generous person or you're not. And if you're not kind and generous, then you probably would rather side with someone who's abusive and nasty and just rude. But that's up to you. I mean, we'll go into the details of it. A lot of money was raised for this young woman, and our own Roman and Jonathan from the Renegade Report managed to find themselves at the forefront of this, along with Sihleng Gwabese. So we'll find out exactly what happened. We'll talk about it a little bit and hopefully figure out why we're so screwed up mentally.
Oh, we're just horrible people. That's all it is.
But I wonder why that is. Because in this case, it doesn't. There's no. You know, there just doesn't seem to be an argument on the side of being horrible. And yet there are people arguing exactly that. And a lot of people making it political when it's clearly just about human decency. Anyway, we'll find out whether or not that's the case, and if you disagree with me or not. And I have a rant this morning. There's something I want to get off my chest. So stick around for that one, too. CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. It's going to be a short week. It's going to be over before you even know. You'll blink your eyes, and it'll be Friday again. CliffCentral.com.